This was Nie, little astonished and reflective like the moon in the first song of the program. But let's now continue with Heval Vian and go a bit deeper to Kurdistan Women's Liberation Movement's principles. There is five of them. First, Velat Parasi. Second, free thought and will. Third, organizing. Fourth, struggle. And five, ethics, aesthetics. I asked Heval Vian to tell about these, and especially about Velat Parasi and ethics, aesthetics.
Yeah, as I said before, the Kurdish women's movement, they were developing through the experience different concepts. They were trying to understand ideologically all these things that they were living, all these obstacles, and also all these methods and tools that they developed in the practice to overcome these obstacles. And one of these concepts that they developed, because they questioned themselves, what does it mean to be a free woman? But if we become free woman, that means that we are also maybe being able to influence men to be also free men. So what does it really mean to be a free human? A human that is able to fight for freedom. And they mean this is an ideological question. We need an ideological identity, because these identities of women and men have been so much played with. Different ideologies of the system have played so much with this. They have always given names to that, how they should behave, how they should relate, what they should be. So the question of this identity of who we are and what we want to be and what does it mean to have a free identity, it was crucial for them. And they were developing a new kind of identity in these mountains, like fighting for the freedom. They were at the same time developing new concepts, new behaviors. And then they theorized this and they presented to the whole movement women's liberation ideology. And in this ideology, of course, it's just not an ideology in the typical concept way that we can understand, like anarchism or communism. It's just not like that. It's mostly centered in like how to develop a struggle, a personality in the maximum understanding of freedom. And it's how we develop a way of life while we struggle that is really aiming to freedom. So this ideology is presenting and is synthesizing like five principles as orientation for every person that wants to develop a free identity. And these five principles are Velat Parasi, free will and free thought, organization, struggle, and ethics and aesthetics. So Velat Parasi is the first principle presented. It's a Kurdish word. It's a word that we as Europeans, it's hard that we translate it. And we preferred also to say it in Kurdish so we can also learn some of their concepts, because they are so deep and they are expressing another completely understanding. For example, there is a wrong translation of the word Velat Parasi. And the people should like notice, like if they ever see this translation, then they should not really listen to that, because Velat Parasi officially is translated in dictionaries as patriotism. And for the first beginning, like patriotism is a patriarchal word, when Velat Parasi is not, and is related to nationalism, to countries are design borders. And Velat Parasi is completely the opposite. It's a concept that is has a really deep internationalist understanding, and that it tears down any understanding of nationalism of borders, like, but it goes beyond that. Velat Parasi means literally to protect the land, to protect your land. And with land, they mean to have an appreciation, to develop the feeling of belonging. And they developed this because they understood that this, you don't belong to something if you don't have a surrounding, you don't have roots. How are you gonna even fight for freedom? You are also like connected to a place. You are also connected to a culture, to an environment, to a community. So, and you have this, you need this, you need these roots, you need this place where you feel you belong to. And of course, the place where we are born, the place where we have created a community, has to be protected, because without that, we cannot also exist. I think this is something that is really, really good, understandable in the indigenous struggles, like how they fight until the end against the destruction of their land, because their land means what they their identity. Their identity is connected with the nature. They are part of the nature. If the nature dies, they die. It's not a question only of tool, like hey, we need is the nature is giving us food. No, it's because the nature is forming who you are. You live with the nature, you live with the land, with your community. You have developed a language there, have developed a personality. So to be able to defend your community, your land of any attacks of the system is the first step to fight for freedom. And also to know who you are. Like if you don't know your roots, if you don't know how you have become what you are, then like you cannot also be free, because you don't know also to against what you are fighting and for what you are fighting. So I also was telling we tell this in different seminars when we speak also here in Europe about these concepts, like how we could understand also this here. This is really important, especially in Europe, in which we reject the states. Of course, we reject the governments, we reject the states, and we reject the borders. But we are not just these borders. We are not just this nationalism. We want to reconnect ourselves again with what are those parts of the community, of the societies we come from the land that is really our part, and that we have to fight for that. We cannot just let it to the system, because then we are also losing a part of us. And we could understand, no, like if we would have a more well a Parisi principle, we will be standing up at any attempt of the companies of destroying today the few natural places that are remaining in Europe. We will stand up against the gentrification in the cities that are destroying the few community ties that are left. We will fight for the right of living. We will fight also in our villages. We will fight for all this, because this is what it makes us to create these community ties. So we need this to be more well apparent in this sense, and it's not about like really idealizing a society or idealizing something like this. And also something really important of this concept is that it's not only about if you were born in a place, but it's about also where you feel that you are part of. So for example, we felt this in Kurdistan. We felt this in as internationalists in Kurdistan. We also gave efforts for this revolution there. We also got connected with the community, with the people of Kurdistan, with the different peoples of Kurdistan, with the Arab people, with the Kurdish people, with the Assyrian people. We feel identified with the ideology and with the values and principles being developed there. And therefore we see Rojava, we see Kurdistan as also our land. And we are fighting for that. And when we say the Rojava revolution is our revolution, it's not just a slogan, it's we really feel it like this, and we will fight for that land, because it's just not a physical geographical space. It means all that, and we need it. So this is an internationalist principle, and this is what it makes us, that it's just not only a struggle of one place, and it's not my problem, but it's my problem, because I serve this and I'm being part of that, and therefore I have to protect it. It's also my struggle. It's also my struggle. The mining fighting in Finland. It's also my struggle, the indigenous struggle in America, like because we are part of that, and this is this Vuela Parisi, and I think this is the stronger concept that the movement was developing, and that we should really have a strong discussion about that in Europe, and how we can like take back and make this feeling again alive. Here, because I think we have forget it.
So that was about Vela Parisi. How about the four other principles mentioned?
We can understand that free will and free thought is to be able to develop a mentality and a knowledge separated from the knowledge and the mentality of the system. That is like what I was saying before with the patriarchal mentality, like how we cannot reproduce patriarchal behaviors, how we can develop a free mentality, like how we can recognize this and therefore fight against that. Like we need to think different in order not to produce the same mistakes. Then with the organizing is like it's not an individual fight, but we have collective problems and therefore we have to organize collectively to face it together. So organization, to be organized and to form organizational structures is something really important that we have to also relearn in Europe. And to that is not enough that how many books I read and how much I know and how much I know that the system is bad, but how do I really come together with other people? And I can really like materialize that in an organizational force. We cannot change alone individually the society. We cannot change the system individually. But we have to really be able to make a step of transformation. Mostly here in Europe, we are stuck on that. Yes, we have really good ideologies. We have a lot of thought. We know really good how bad is the system and all that. We are not able to change to a phase of transformation. We are not able to transmit this to the society to really make a change. So, because we are lacking organizations, we are lacking a really organizational strategy. And this is what it means, this principle. First of all, we have to get organized. And the struggle will be that, will be this, the phase of transformation. To be able, with different strategies, with different methods and tools, to overcome the obstacles and to really put it in practice. And with the ethics and aesthetics, this is really, really like a deep theme, even like with the Vuelad para el Sí. But the ethics and aesthetics is a really interesting point that we can say this is one of the core points also of the movement, and that englobes everything. Like we cannot organize, we cannot fight without ethics and aesthetics. And to rethink the concept of ethics is also really important. And with which kind of principles are we living? Like to say it really short, in the Kurdish movement, they present us the concept of ethics as principles of collective understanding of freedom. So it's not an individual understanding of freedom. Like I liberate myself, this is for me what I understand for freedom, and I live like that. But how I can come to a common understanding of freedom that is good and in benefit of all. So these things that we can say that is not something new that humans have done, but the first societies were developing this in a natural way, like codes of living, common living together that are respecting the collective freedom. And so it's a question of this, no, what is the right and what is the wrong? And it's completely the opposite of a law or a moral system that religion can develop or like or the state. But it goes beyond that. It's a natural understanding of freedom for the collective. And without what we cannot really do anything else. Because if you just create an institution or you just create laws that they are dictating again the good and the bad, but it's not internalized in the really understanding of freedom, then the same system will be reproduced in the long term and the mechanisms of oppression. So with ethics is this, the movement is talking about the developing of an ethico-political society. And this is really interesting because with the change of the paradigm, the aim is not like this, not create a state understanding saying what to do, this dictatorship of the proletariat, and therefore like maybe later communism. It's in that moment like how do you make the whole society conscious of each other, of freedom, and how you create an ethical society in this way, how you are able to develop this consciousness of a collective freedom. An ethico-political society that is like, okay, they have this consciousness by their own, and therefore they are able to develop social practices that ensure these collective principles of freedom. And this is the, will be the real politics. And therefore, in this case, we can say that this society will be autonomous. This society will not be governed by anybody because its self-consciousness is alive. And with the aesthetics is this, is like what is to live according to these principles. So in talking personally as an identity, you know, ethics and aesthetics is this, okay, I have this consciousness of freedom, I have these ethical principles, and how I really live according to them. Is this a form, is to give form to the ethics. It's about how you talk, how you move, how you present yourself, how you relate with others. In all your being, in all your movements, you are showing, really, your connection to these ethical principles. And this is the aesthetic. It has nothing to do with physical beauty, with designation of what it, with fashion or something like that. This is the problem, that they have emptied the word from any kind of ethical meaning. And therefore, like, there is people dying because they are not beauty enough. There is people that have to pay, I don't know how much money, to be according to the models that they put in the television. And especially this affecting more and more the woman. So that's why the woman's liberation ideology has put the ethics and aesthetics as a core principle of, like, how, what it means beauty. Beauty cannot exist if there is no freedom. And especially for a woman, they are saying to us, the most beautiful woman is a woman that fights, that liberates herself, and that is free. And this is the beautiful woman. Not a woman, a slave, not an oppressed woman, not a classical woman. All this, yeah, englobes all the rest. And later we will see that in genealogy, also the ethics and aesthetics is one of the main areas of understanding and of developing a perspective.
There were the five principles of Kurdistan Women's Liberation Movement. Let's now listen to some music. Next, we will hear Koma Zehid Neval's piece Vajeiro YPC. It is a song about women's self-defense forces, YPG's resistance.
Vajeiro YPC, MPC'nin Kürdistan'ine. Vajeiro YPC, MPC'nin Kürdistan'ine.
was Koma Zehid Neval with song Vajeiro Jebese. You are listening to Totuus Radio in Radio Moreni frequency 98.4. And today's program is called You Have Joined the Women's Revolution. European internationalist and a member of Europe's Genealogy Committee, Heval Vian, is telling us about Kurdistan Women's Liberation Movement. Next, we will hear how Kurdistan Women's Liberation Movement differs from feminism or the perspective how we here in Europe understand feminism.
Yeah, this is also really interesting because sometimes from Europe and also other Western countries, feminist organizations and so on, they have been said all the time like the Kurdish feminism, the Kurdish version of feminism, what when Rojava, no, and with the defense units of the YPG, they was always like these, no, imposters like Kurdish feminism, the feminist of Kurdistan. And this is a huge mistake. And it's not because they reject feminism. No, no, this is the opposite. They see also feminism as a heritage of them. But their development has been different. This is, again, a very orientalist perspective that is like to see everything from the perspective of Europe, from the same development of Europe, to categorize everything with the words and the concepts of Europe and the Western countries. So it's incorrect to say the Kurdish feminism, because it's not that. It's not that from feminism they have developed their own struggle. They have developed their own experiences. I was telling from the 70s, the 80s, they were fighting in the guerrilla. They have their own struggle. They have their own structures, their own theories, their own ideology. And so they developed their own way. Of course, there's a lot of things similar to feminism because this is the point, no? Like, of course, patriarchy is manifested in a different way in every country, and this is also was related to the other question: how it's manifested in the behavior. It's not manifested maybe in the same way in Kurdistan or in the Middle East that is manifested in a city of Western capitalist Europe. But there's some commonalities. The sense is the same. It's the same ideology. Just the form sometimes changes. So, of course, when we see the Kurdish women's movement and the things that they are telling us and also their ideology, we can see a lot of similarities with feminism because our struggle is fighting against the same. And a lot of things that are developed, then they are really similar. And this is where we can come together. But it will be wrong to call them Kurdistan feminism. And so their experience with feminism has been different. Also, the Kurdish women, being in the part of Turkey, they also have their contact to feminism before, but they have a really contradiction with the feminists in Turkey, because mostly first was developed by Turkish women, Turkish feminists, and they were not understanding the special situation of Kurdish women as colonialized also women. They were not understanding the nation oppression there. So therefore, this contradiction with the Turkish feminism, we can call it, also made them to develop their own ways according to their own situation as colonialized women and women in the Middle East. But also with the years when they developed their party, their organizations, they were also being able to go everywhere in the world. They were also organized in Europe, and then they opened their connections to all the women's struggles in the world, women and feminist struggles. And there they could also complement their struggle with the experience of other feminist and women struggles. In Kurdistan, the women, they say that we are the continuation of Rosa Luxemburg. We are the continuation of Clara Zetkin. We are the continuation of Mujeres Libres in Spain. And they acknowledge this. And they have learned from this when they got to know about that. And they say like, oh yeah, this when they got also to know the Zapatistas in Mexico, they say like, wow, we also think the same, and it's the same with the Zapatistas woman. You will not say that it's like Zapatistas feminism. They have developed their own way, and this is where we are going to come together. So in summary, we can say this. No, we cannot call it feminism because they have their own way. But a lot of these women in Kurdistan, they say, I'm a feminist. But the movement is much has another kind of concept. And feminism is also part of that. It's a part of a source, it's a source of knowledge, it's a source of experience, and they take it also as a struggle that they defend and a heritage also for their struggle from when they learn. You can go to the academies in Rojava and there is the pictures of Simone de Beauvoir. There's the pictures of Louise Michel. Even if Louise Michel in that those times they were not calling themselves herself feminist. But there also there is the picture of Angela Davis. And in all the conferences of the women's movements, Kurdish women's movement in Europe, they have been able to take all this diversity. And this is something really also important that we should learn, like how we can come together under the diversity, under the commonalities also, and to see our differences not as a concurrence or as a problem or as an obstacle, but how we can learn and to complete better the whole struggle. And I think this is the main, we can say, the main understanding of feminism and Kurdish women's movement.
In 1997, Abdullah Öcalan stated that his main task is to kill a dominant man, inside of his own mind, inside PKK, and in common, inside people's minds. I asked Hevalvian to explain this a bit more. And, by the way, if you hear dog snoring in the background, it is just because there is a dog snoring at the background. Sorry about that. Zero is very brave when it comes to sleeping. But now, about dominant man.
Yeah, this is one of the interesting concepts also of the movement, that actually is a revolution itself. Like, I have not heard any revolutionary movement in history that they were saying our main task is to kill the dominant man. like this is something completely new of them. And Abdullah Öcalan, all the discussions I said at the beginning that they were happening inside the party with the guerrilla, with all the creation of the concepts, he made a synthesis in this, saying, we are killing the dominant man. And he said, like, I killing the dominant man in myself. And from outside, this was not understandable. But he was really knowing what he was saying. It was meaning really all this struggle that it was happening inside the PKK, like how to approach these behaviors, how to change our personality to be a revolutionary and free personality. And for this, we see what is the main problem, where the domination started. It started with the creation of this male dominant mentality, with the systematization of this mentality in the form of the state, and therefore all the structures and institutions develop after. So if we really want to liberate ourselves also personally, to create this free thought, free will that we were talking in the principles, this has to go through killing this mentality. And this mentality is killing the dominant man inside us. And he was meaning this not only for the men, but also for the women. Because this is a mentality, this is an ideology, it's for every individual of the society. So he was saying this, like, for me, killing the man is killing the fascism, is killing the despotism, is killing the domination. He was also saying in this interview when he was presenting the concept, like, the killing the dominant man is the very first principle of socialism. And what I'm trying to do in the PKK is what no one else have been able to succeed in. And this is really interesting because he was saying this in 97, and from 97 it was increased the repression against the PKK, against Abdullah Öcalan itself. And this concept was really discussed in the movement, how this could really happen. We are not talking about a physical killing, we are talking about an ideological killing to be able to change what we have to destroy to be able to change. So then it started everything, you know, like, what we really mean with dominant masculinity, what that means, that exists other kind of masculinities, then which kind of free masculinities can also exist, which kind of free men can also exist. And all this, then they said, okay, how we systematize all that, how we can, like, develop discussions in a strategical way from this. And in the mountains, they created different academies of killing the dominant man, that with the time it was transforming, and these special academies were brought to the whole movement in all the areas of also the society to be discussed. It was just not something that you go to an academy and you learn, but it has to be discussed continuously. Everybody that is in the movement, from the communes, from the cooperatives. In Rojava it's like this. In Rojava also every person, even in the schools, they are discussing about that. So it's actually a really interesting concept about that, no? They are understanding that this masculinity is a specific masculinity. And as I said also before, no, that it's not a natural thing, but it's an ideology that has been created, how we can be different. What is our real nature? This is not us. This is not us. It's not our destiny to be like this. So it's also a concept that liberates so much the men. So even if at the beginning the men could be afraid, because they enter in a crisis of identity, they say like, then what I am? Because the women developed other tools, they were organizing themselves, they knew that this life of oppression, it could not be like that. They were already searching for freedom, but the men, they were not searching for freedom inside themselves. They were thinking in the freedom in a really more simplistic way, no? In a really, like, okay, yeah, we liberate Kurdistan, we liberate the society, we create this. But they were not thinking in their own internalized oppression. They are not even realizing that a patriarchy is oppressing them. They think that it's mostly like the oppressed woman, or like women have to be like us, like if they were already free. So with this concept, is showing that no, that you are enslaved also on patriarchy as much as the women are, and that you have so much to gain as much as the women with this liberation. And this perspective is really what is being revolutionary. And in my opinion, I think, of course, there is a lot of work to do. It's really difficult, of course, not only the society of Kurdistan, in all our societies. We are not like in better position also here in Europe with this. Actually, I think we are in a really worst one sometimes. But I think they are really being successful in this, and they are really going in a direction that it can really be able to make historical changes. And this is something that they were saying to all of us. And this is really like we should keep in mind, like we are not starting from zero. Any revolutionary movement is starting from zero. We are not starting our struggle from zero anywhere in the world. We are the continuation of thousands of years of resistance against this mentality, against the domination and oppression. Like from very singular individuals that we don't know, have been lost in history, for the last revolutionary movements. And we are just adding a new, like, brick, like, in this, how do you say, a new step in this way. We have the opportunity then to make it better every time. And they see it like this. They say, okay, what has been wrong in the other revolutionary experiences, where they have failed, what we can learn from that. And one of the things that the PKK is saying, like, with the fail of other revolutionary movements, it was this. Like, they have not been killing the dominant man. So we are adding this, for sure. And I think this is something really interesting, no? Because it's a really, like, incredible perspective of hope also, of saying, like, every time that maybe we may fail, yes, we may fail, but we can learn from that mistake and we will do it better. And we will be closer to this final liberation. And they are really this last inspiration and revolution from where we have really the opportunity to make one of the biggest steps in this historical fight. And with this concept, like, it means all this.
Next, I would like to present to you Kielo Kärkkäinen's Andri Tuohiniitys, Antti Hiarts and Simo Laihonen's band Belis. The song is called Mis Dos Madres, My Two Mothers.
Mira, aquí tiene a mis dos madres conversando en la madrugada. Oye, aquí conversando. hace piernas, unas más largas que otras. Con ellas he recorrido las calles que me pintaron. Yo tengo 13 piernas, unas más largas que otras. Con ellas he recorrido bosques nuevos y crueles, nunca vistos por los ojos de mi doma.
That was Bellis and Miss Dos Madres. You are listening to Totuus Radio, and we are talking about Kurdistan Women's Liberation Movement. One part of the movement is creating and discovering a new science called genealogy. Heval Wian will now give us a short introduction what it is all about.
Yeah, the genealogy, it means literally the science of women. It's a science, social science for the whole society. So the perspective is like from a woman's intellect and knowledge to be able to create a free knowledge for the whole society as a perspective. So this is the last step in the Kurdish woman's freedom movement. They have created all these institutions, I said, all these structures of organization. And with the change of the paradigm, and we are talking all the time about that, no? It's a question at the end of like changing of the mentality, of creating a new mentality and transforming the mentality in the society to remove the mentality of the system. It's just not about institutions. So how do we do that? After all, it's always a question of how we understand the world, how we understand the problems in the society, which kind of alternatives are we bringing, which mentality are we forming this and giving these alternatives? Which kind of solutions are we proposing? And so this means a new system of knowledge, a new system of understanding ourselves and understanding the society, of knowing who we are, especially as women. So if we are saying that this is a woman's revolution, that this is a revolution that with the spirit of the freedom of the woman, we will liberate the whole society. Therefore, there has to be also a knowledge according to that. We cannot use the knowledge, the history written by the system. We cannot use like the explanation of the system. We have to have our own explanation, and this is a science. Systematization of knowledge and the creation of a system of knowledge, this is a science. So from the critique of which kind of system of knowledge is being used by the system, by capitalism, by patriarchy, we are able to create another system of knowledge. The basic thing is like our concept and framework of knowledge is dictated by the positivism science, by the modern science of Europe, and there's a huge critic on that, and this is just not something of the academies, but it's shaping all the way that we think and how we see the world. And a lot of the problems that we were saying before in the last questions about how we approach Rojava, about this Eurocentrism, actually comes from here. It comes from also this concept of science. And all these oppressions that we live in society, the destruction of the nature, like murderous sexism that every time it gets stronger, like the racism, all this is being legitimized with scientific methods. So we have a problem with this, and we cannot reproduce the same. So then the Kurdish women's movement, they suppressed us once again, and they say like, yes, we are going to create our own science. And it's not something easy, but we have seen that they don't take easy tasks and that they like challenges. So they, in 2008, after these discussions with the new paradigm proposed by Öcalan, the group of women in the mountains, they started to develop genealogy 2011 to create this science, first from the woman to the whole society. And this science, to say it really also short, of course, as the word says, genealogy, gen means women, a very specific concept of woman in Kurdish, and then logi, that it will be logos, coming from knowledge. So the first of all is this, what is gen, what is woman? And this is related with this ideology of liberation of woman, is related to this ethics and aesthetics, which kind of free identity are we developing, and which kind of lies have been said about us. It's about writing our own history also, of women and of the oppressed peoples. But in the other hand also, it's not only about analyzing and pointing out of the problems, but as a science has to be able to propose solutions and alternatives to the problems. So in this, for example, genealogy, the place that is being more in practice and being developed is in Rojava, of course. They have been able to do a revolution, they are liberating a territory, so they have the opportunities to develop a practical work. And just to give an example, how does it work there, new science in a revolution? Because a lot of us, we have never thought about that. No, we have said, like, we have not thought about the relation of science of an ideology. Like, do we even, as an ideology, we have ideologies, not in our movements, but have we ever thought in relating it with a system of science? Where are we getting our knowledge from? I think actually the feminist movements are more advanced in this, because how much the science and knowledge have been ignoring women all the time and the knowledge of women, they have been able to develop other feminist epistemologies or like of way of creating knowledge. But still this doesn't become in the general movements, for example, in the workers' movements, in the anarchist movements, as a base to take of where to start thinking. No, it's said there, oh yeah, it's a source of information, and that's it. So, no, in Rojava, in Kurdistan, they are not saying this, they say no. Like, this is going to be the base. So how then this means in the practice? For example, in Rojava, in the confederal system, everybody knows, no, they have cooperatives, they have a cooperative economy, they have education, they have academies, universities, they have schools, they have also health academies, a health system, they have a system of justice. They are also developing different concepts of justice. They are also having self-defense forces, so a concept of what is self-defense. They are also having a concept of family, of relationships. So all these are questions in a revolution. So the genealogy there, in research centers, with its research programs, try to understand from a woman's liberation perspective all these crises of areas in the society. Because today, if we look at the system and the societies and how they are being oppressed, we see that these areas are in crisis. The economy is in crisis. The control of our bodies, for example, reproduction, this is in crisis. The education, the health, the ecology, the relation to the environment, all these politics. So to identify in this and also be in the areas of democratic confederalism that are proposing an alternative, from which alternative are you proposing? This has to come from an understanding. This has to come from a deep analyze and a different perspective. So where is this is where it comes genealogy. So genealogy is giving the perspective to these areas to do it different. And of course, genealogy doesn't want to repeat to be an elitist thing, but it's a question of the whole, all the people. Of course, there is people that we are focusing in developing this work, that this work is developed, that we are thinking in the strategies so it can function. But the knowledge comes from the people. It comes from the experience and from the failing and from like being successful in trying that also, and from the own experience of the woman and of the people. So in Rojava, how they take this knowledge and how they bring this knowledge back to the society. This is the academia. So in the academies is where this science system, this knowledge system is meeting with the society, and they are exchanging and they are learning from each other and they are having a feedback. So all these areas of Rojava, they are meeting in these academies and they are transmitting and reflecting, all the time criticizing, all the time rethinking the practice. And this is giving the knowledge to genealogy to broad and systematize this practice and make a theory out of that. And at the same time, this is again giving a perspective to the population to overcome some problems. And this is exactly this science. And in Europe, we are trying to do that in a really much lower level, because genealogy exists in Europe only since 2017 through committees. But of course, we don't have a revolution. We have not liberated a territory. But now what we are trying to do is first try to create a consciousness of why it's necessary a knowledge, and a knowledge coming from a woman's revolutionary perspective. We are trying to create a free identity of woman first, that the woman with a free identity, they can develop another knowledge. And at the same time, we are also doing other researches, of course, because we see, especially now with the emerging and getting more stronger and stronger, the fascist mentalities in whole Europe, we are in need of a perspective. We are in need of alternative solutions. It cannot be again, no? There is a vacuum in proposing more than the typical like social democrats or like non-liberal positions to fascism, like it's in our hands also, and for this we need it. And so we are doing a lot of research on that, and of course we are trying to learn from the feminism, from already local struggles here, local struggles in within nature, with different ways of also cooperativism exists a lot like this in Europe. So how we can get all this knowledge together? It cannot be that it's just an individual experience of a group somewhere. But all of us, we can get benefit from that. Really, and to create, that is really necessary for all our movements in Europe also, a framework of knowledge where we can support our movements in, and we can reflect them and we can improve them. And yeah, I think like in a really, really fast way we can explain genealogy now like this.
Eval Vian is a member of European Genealogy Committee. They are having two main themes this year. One is killing the dominant man, which was already discussed in the program, at least from the historical point of view. The other is about concept of queer. I asked Eval Vian to tell more about this.
One of the necessities we have seen in the world in genealogy, it has been an understanding also of how other genders are manifested and the struggles also of other genders. And so it's not only about the queer theory, but of course the queer concept is one of the main concepts being manifested also in the gender struggles against patriarchy in Europe and Western countries. So this is a way of how to understand first what is presenting from there, so we can also broaden our knowledge. And we don't repeat also the same mistakes of binarism of the system, but also is a way to realize which kind of problematics have also these struggles and why these struggles and these concerns are have not been able, in all the years that are really put in practice, they have not been able yet to propose an alternative for the liberation of the whole society. What it happens, or what are problematic also in these theories or in these movements, that it stays sometimes in an individual understanding, or they are really not being able to be socialized. So this is also another aim. And we think that with genealogy we can overcome together with these other concepts, these limits that they have. We are seeing where this concept or these movements, they have been developed, and for example, from the concept of queer, from the queer theory, where are they also being reproducing parts of the movement? Because at the end we are fighting against patriarchy, no? And we can fight in different ways. Like the Kurdish women's movement is taking the identity of woman as a strategical identity to fight against patriarchy. But it's not saying that everybody should maybe identify like that. But we can fight together. And it's important that we come an understanding, and that we learn from our own experience, and we can broaden this perspective. And especially for this, know that we can really see where we are failing to complete it. And also, of course, like genealogy is a science, it's not a movement, or it's not just a theory. Like maybe it could be queer or LGBTIQ rights, no, or trans rights. These are specific struggles where we can learn a lot from them, and we should be together. And genealogy as a science could also get this, and also bring back another perspective, so they don't get assimilated by the system, and they can really be developing a whole social transformation perspective. And this is now what we are doing also, because the realities in Europe, how is manifested the gender roles, is really is in a different way. So as being a science that is just not homogeneous, we cannot approach some things in the same way. We also have to understand how these roles are manifested in every region. So that's why through genealogy in the different regions and committees, we are trying to understand these concepts and these struggles in our own regions, and where we can form alliances also and learn together. And that's why this was a really of urgent thing. And we are now also working on that. Also in many of our different camps and our different educations, we are working with queer identities and non-binary identities. And they have, for example, enriched a lot the knowledge of genealogy. We have learned a lot from queer people and trans people of history of trans identities, for example, of different existence of genders in pre-patriarchal societies. We are also learning from other different societies in the world, like indigenous societies in Latin America, like also other indigenous societies in Asia or in India, how different roles are performed in the society there. So we can really give a broader perspective in this killing the masculinity, and how we can develop free identities and be ourselves also, no? The aim of genealogy is not to categorize women or categorize men. Like this will be do the same that the patriarchal system did. And therefore we can learn a lot from these concepts and these struggles.
As a last question, Hevalvian told little about how queer question is seen in Kurdistan.
In Kurdistan, of course, as I said, we should not try to use the same concepts to define other situations. I think they have their own struggle, and the society is making their own way. And the genealogy and the revolutionary woman there, they are open to discuss what the society is in need to discuss, and when this appeared. For example, in the genealogy academias in Rojava, they name that this exists, that there is a queer theory, for example, or there is another gender identities being lived in another societies in the world. So they are naming it, even if the people don't recognize it or will not name it, maybe there in Rojava in this moment. But this is the point of genealogy as a science is not going to impose a discussion, or like impose a concept if it's not being manifested in that moment there. It's going to respond to the situation of a specific society. This is what the Kurdish women there they were saying to us in the moment that we need to name also gender identity struggles in Kurdistan, different sexualities in Kurdistan, because they exist. No one is saying that that they don't exist. Of course they exist. Maybe they are not recognized, and they are not recognized as a specific struggle. But in the moment that this could appear and there is a necessity from the society for that, that's why genealogy there as an open and free science should be there to take this discussion and to develop it together with the society, with always taking us as a ground the whole freedom of the society. This is what mostly we can say, and that of course is not the same situation as in other places. Mm. No, I just want to thank everybody. I want to thank the radio, the program, and I hope that these programs also are a good tool to understand better the proposal of the Kurdish freedom movement, and that they give us also perspective and strength for our struggles everywhere. Thank you.
Thank you, Hevalvian. Discussion continues. We started this program with a very poetical song, so let's finish with a similar manner. Artist called Niemi published the whole record of lullabies this year. With song Spiraalit, Spirals, we will go to forest and to meadows. Here, like in Nivis the guerrilla song at the beginning of this program, there are the stars. There is dancing, not in the row, but in a circle, and the lost of loved one. And still there is hope. Flowers will sprout from the ash if you have patience to wait. Good night, everybody. Thank you for listening. And let's keep on dreaming and struggling for our dreams.
Kuusi potne kumarta ien voima tienoita seulo. Kuusi potne kumarta ien voima tienoita seulo. Käy minun
se maahan jatkaa matkaa. Koska sun paljon